Now that you've had a breath of fresh air, you can clear your mind so we can mind your business. Welcome to the Mind Your Business podcast with Dr. Shelley Crampton.
This podcast is to explore some of the key words and develop a better understanding of what trauma therapy actually is. I, Michaela, will be your host along with LaShanda, the island therapist, and Dr. Shelley Crampton, who is a certified trauma therapist with a doctorate in community care and traumatology. So let's talk about emotions today. Like the thing I hate the most. Emotions.
Well, that said.
It's always good to start off on the I hate emotions note.
Join the club. So
we shouldn't hate emotion, but that's what we're going to get to.
Okay, fair.
So a study done in 1982 for the prevention of cancer, and the study was done in Germany, found that 56% of women who were biopsied for breast cancer had the following traits, right? Altruistic behavior, they avoided conflict, and they had suppressed emotions. Just based off that information alone, the...
Hold up, 56%?
56%.
Girl, that's a lot.
Oh, I gotta get this emotion out.
And the thing is, like, 94% of the testers were able to predict the diagnosis of cancer without never meeting the women, just based off of those traits.
Criteria, wow.
Mm-hmm. So, wait, whoa. Hold up. I'm catching up here. They were just given the symptoms?
Yep. No, they were given the personality traits.
Okay, so they were given the personality traits, and they were able to diagnose it with cancer before even, like, reading a screen.
Mm-hmm. About 94% of them, yep.
Oh,
and a study on breast cancer conducted by King's College in London showed that most women who had cancerous breast lumps characteristically exhibited suppression of anger and other emotions.
Mm. Oh, good thing I let that anger out all the time. That's good.
Well, we'll discuss that as well. So here's the thing with that. So evidence would suggest, is how we say that, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the suppression of emotion definitely does cause a bodily reaction. That we can say for certainty, right? One reason we know, I'm not a doctor here, and I want to reiterate that point.
A medical doctor. You're not a medical doctor.
Oh, that's
doctor.
True. Yeah, I'm not a medical doctor here. but it's important to note there are a lot of studies that show that suppression of emotions and things also create inflammation in the body and lower immunity. So I would say that goes along with that, right?
Yeah, and that definitely segments into this very last one that I was going to bring up. It said, in a study of men with prostate cancer, all of them had the characteristic of anger suppression that lowered their immune system.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we go into fight and flight, that we... exude all of these chemicals into our bodies, right?
Right.
That's what helps propel our bodies to run or to fight or to flee or to fawn or appease or all those things we need to do in order to survive, right? So think about that in the context of biology. I would assume that probably has something to do with it, which we know cortisol levels are raised. So interesting. It's very interesting, isn't it? If you were to say, I'm going to ask you this, Michaela. If you were to say what you grew up thinking emotions were, what would you say?
We keep those behind closed doors unless they're, quote, quote, good emotions, which would be happy, joyful, obedient, kind, fruits of the spirit. In a Christian world, you can have those things. Those are good, but any type of quote, quote, bad feelings, those are to be suppressed.
And not examined, for sure.
Definitely.
Okay, interesting. So in our previous like podcast, we've talked a little bit about like dysregulation, right? So today, I thought, because this has kind of been my theme for the week, ooh, I like this better. That works better. Sorry about that.
She's now holding the mic, y'all.
I'm holding the mic now. So dysregulation occurs when our danger or threat response, that's the red or blue mm-hmm. that we know as red or blue. We can call it a lot of different things, right? Mm-hmm. The red or blue, the survival response comes on because it says that there's danger somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that will always send our emotions into overdrive because our thinking brain goes offline, right? So it'll either produce the red or the blue, which is the activated response or the shutdown response. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So when we're talking about emotions, why is it important that, like, when I first start with my clients, I always say, hey, what am I feeling? I assess that at least 3 times a day. What am I feeling and where am I feeling that in my body? Well, for a long time, I had no idea what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys know what that? I didn't.
None whatsoever. No.
I'd be like, what do you mean feel it in my body?
Okay, I still know what it means and I still struggle with it.
Yeah. So this week, an interesting thing happened. Well, it was actually last week that started. But with all my clients, that was coming up a lot. Like, ignoring emotions, putting them to the side, trying to think their way out of their emotions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was even happening a little bit in my own therapy, you know, and I was intellectualizing emotion, which means I tell a story about my emotion.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. It just isn't actually feeling the emotion.
I have a question about that, though.
Yeah.
Did you notice that more with men versus or females, or was it
I actually noticed it across the board.
Okay.
Across the board. Yeah. I think we'd have a tendency to think that men ignore their emotions.
Right.
It's of course you have to understand if they're coming to therapy, they're very much more open than most men.
Mm-hmm.
So in my opinion, that's an opinion. Sorry. But, they are willing to look at those things more readily.
Right.
So I do see a lot of more, I have great men, very strong men, and strong in the sense of not afraid to be open and honest and authentic.
Mm-hmm.
So what that's what was coming up for me. So I started going into my weird creative brain. I used to do sketch comedy. Yeah.
What?
Just, yeah. 'Cause I'm weird. Mostly just in my home.
Oh, I was like, never heard of that, but no, I would love to someday.
Yes. Well, my daughter and I actually. Yeah. Yes. Oh, well, no, we don't want to analyze that.
Yes, we do. Like, so, deeply.
So in high school and stuff, I was kind of known for that. Like, I did stuff like that. Like, mm-hmm. I was a theater gal. So, you know, I did a lot of that. And my daughter and I actually were sitting down watching some of that stuff. And it opened up this side of my brain that I haven't used in a minute. That and some therapy did. And I got to thinking about what that would look like, how to explain why we don't shut out the emotions. So this, if you're a visual person, this will help you. Okay. If you're not, just listen to the example.
I'm an audible learner. So
that's good. You'll like it then. So I envisioned it as like you're standing at the door. Okay. In your room. And beside you is your brain, okay? Imagine your brain almost as a human being, right? And it's saying to you, hey, the emotions are knocking at the door. Do not, whatever you do, let them in, right? What are they going to do? They're going to cause chaos. Do not let them in. Do not. And so we listen to our brain, right? And picture those emotions knocking at your door.
It's given inside out going crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, really, it is. No, it is. And so I talked to my clients through this as almost like a visualization. And what I said, what is going to happen if you override your brain and you open the door? Are emotions going to cause chaos? Sometimes.
Possibly. They're going to rush in real quick. They're most, like, we've been banging on this door for a long time.
Most of the time, yes. Yeah. But what do they eventually do?
They calm down.
They settle, right? So then I went further with that with some of my teenage clients. And one of my clients, which I wish I could tell you who he was because this was brilliant. I'd love to attribute it to him. He actually said to me, I said, if you ever go into a house where a dog's just out of control, okay, yeah. When you're a new person, you walk in the house, dogs go out of control, right?
Yes.
Freak out. Completely freak out. And they're running around. They're jumping on the stuff. What do they eventually do?
Calm down.
Settle. Right? What do they want you to do?
Pet them.
Yeah. Sit with them. Right?
Give them attention.
Yeah. So Penny. Here's the thing. I said that, this kid looks at me and goes, wait a minute. So what you're telling me is, seriously, he was so cool. I was like, yes. You know, you have a therapist moment where you're like, yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. He said, so what you're telling me is I just keep running around and the dog keeps chasing me.
Oh, that's so good.
Legit.
Yeah. And then, yeah. So then he goes, so really all I need to do is sit with the dog and pet it a little, mm-hmm. and then it's going to settle down.
That's so good.
Yeah. This is a kid. This is a mm-hmm. kid. And I loved it because I thought, what a great way to explain that. We are wasting so much energy running from the dog, right? Instead, if we just sit with that a second, the dog will settle.
The dog might bite.
Yeah, it might. But then it's not going to settle.
Maybe.
And you've kind of got to get your brain in that mindset of...
Before we jump into that, if you're okay, mm-hmm. what do we do with the client that says, what if the dog bites me?
Yeah, because
I feel like that's so very real, right? Because one right here.
Well, it is real. But
did you see the emotion on my body? Yeah. My back?
But, our emotions there to harm us? No.
No, they just help us to be aware of what's
going on.
So they're
not
going to
bite us. Yeah. They might hurt us. We might feel pain from that. But what we're trying to learn is addressing emotions in the context of, let's get them out of the way.
I don't think it's the emotion itself, for me. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the emotion itself. It's my response to the emotion.
Of course.
What I'm going to say, what I'm going to do to either suppress it, mm-hmm. or if I let the emotion have control, mm-hmm. then it's like, I don't know what's going to come out of this.
Well, but that's the point in here. And so that's part of what we're talking about is learning to have the regulated
emotion.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. Emotions are not always regulated and they're not really supposed to be. But you have to be able to go back into that green, that ventral vagal. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean right away. You have to learn how to do that. So Pat Ogden is real big on she's a body therapist, really, sensory motor psychotherapy. And I love it. Great book, by the way, if you need it, if you need to learn about that. But she talks about these defenses that we have as being animal defenses. So we have to ask ourselves, is this emotion causing us to be outside of our window of tolerance? Sometimes the answer will be yes, right?
Yeah, 90% of the time.
Because
probably.
You're in survival mode.
Yes.
So you have to learn the difference between when you are having an emotion that is outside your window mm-hmm. and when it is inside your window. And that's part of the training, is training your brain to know the difference of when you're
so
in ventral.
So I can have anger outside of my window, which mm-hmm. is going to be kind of more explosive.
Survival mode.
Mm-hmm. And I can have anger in my window. Mm-hmm. Without suppressing it.
Correct.
Ooh, tell me more.
I was about to say, like, I have another question on the opposite end of that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What about when we experience happiness or joy outside of that window? Is that even possible? Is it possible to be so overjoyed that it's like, I don't know how to experience this?
Well, I think here's the problem with that. I think joy may always be in ventral. I would have to explore that more. But mm-hmm. I think it's always in green. It's always within our window of tolerance, except for in the sense of we just don't know how to do it.
Mm. Somebody that
we just don't know how to do it. We don't know how to be in green. We don't know how to just be okay and feel those emotions. Mm. Yeah. So I'm not sure about that one exactly. If that can be, it's too much energy, so it probably would be a little red.
For feeling joy or happiness for somebody that is in survival mode all the time, it may send them out of a regulated state because they don't know how to experience it. Would that be right?
No, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah, it can. And that's why you have to learn. It's like a muscle. You have to build it. You have to keep building those things. So how do you address those things? Well, as a therapist, what I'm learning in my trauma training mm-hmm. is we have to deal with that client using the bottom-up strategy. And if you're a therapist, you know what that means. It means from this way. From the body up to the brain, meaning you address the body sensations first. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is happening in your body? What is happening in your body? So the client can identify that and have them do it in detail. You know, what are you experiencing? Because then it trains them to go into a whole different mode of this is a normal emotion. This is not out of my window of tolerance. And they learn to tell the difference. You can't tell the difference at first, and that's why we get them safe. you can't experience it out of safety because it will always be out of your window of tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I like that.
Yeah. It says it's a controlled way to help a client gain control by addressing, this is Pat Ogden. I mean, this is my interpretation of Pat Ogden, by the way. It is a controlled way to help the client gain control by addressing the first line of defense, which is the body. The body's always the first line of defense. The body is what is reacting really before the brain can interpret what's happening. Do you so ever, if we address it, that's important.
Do you ever get to a point where you don't have to actively think about where you're feeling it in your body?
I would say the answer to that is mostly.
Because I'm still at a point where, like, I'll feel the emotion, and then I recognize I'm dysregulated, and then I jump mm-hmm. to, like, it takes me a hot minute to even think about my body.
Mm-hmm. Because you're used to doing what?
Just reacting.
Ignoring it.
Yeah.
You're used to ignoring what's happening in your body. Yeah, that's why you have to train your brain to do it. It takes time, and that's why it's such a slow, trauma therapy is slow.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be. Has to be, because you are changing brain function.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah, the answer to that is mostly. Do you ever get all the way where you don't have reactions and get out of your window of no, I still do. I probably will always. I mean, I'm in therapy to help me with that even, you know. So, yeah, I think, remember, different layers. And learning how to do this. Now, with dissociated clients, just so you know, you have to do it differently. And we're not even going to get into that too much, but yes. So I think a good question to ask is, how did we get there? How did we get so many people? Of course, I'm a trauma therapist, so I see more people who are dysregulated, you know, in their nervous systems than most. But how did we get there? You know, how did we get to where everyone's in survival mode?
Being taught to suppress your emotions.
Yeah.
Never really having either parents, caregivers, or a community that says, it's okay to sit in that and feel that.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been that, let's move on. Mm-hmm. You know, you have mm-hmm. things you got to do.
Yes.
You got school you got to do. You got work you got to do. You got a family you have to take care of.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. No. So attachment is a big part of that. Bowlby, you know, the Bowlby yeah. studies. Bowlby was a big attachment person, but asserts this, and I like this. It develops and arises during the formation and disruption of attachment relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you think about it, that has to be true. It's not, you know, remember, I don't know if, I think we talked about this last time, but I can't remember what we talked about, to be honest with you. It's been a minute. But when we were talking about attachment and we talked about the things that are key to good, secure attachment were rupture with repair.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's also where this happens, is a child never learns to emotionally express because there's no way to repair that or make sense of it. They don't know how to make sense of their emotions if no one's telling them or walking through the repair process. Yeah. So there's a disruption in those attachment relationships. And we don't want to label feelings as good or bad. That's another right. thing I've learned in all of this trauma work, is they're not good or bad. They just are, you know.
Mm.
Now, our behaviors can be different. We're not talking about behavior, though. We're talking about emotion. And I think that's where parents, a lot of times, I think, get confused. Don't you?
Mm-hmm.
We are very focused on the behaviors.
Yeah.
When you say that, what it makes me think of the situation, whether you might be in any kind of couples counseling. It doesn't have to be marriage. It can be friends. It can be family. It can be whatever you want to call it, where there's more than one person involved.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that dynamic of one party being upset because the mm-hmm. other person gets angry.
Yes.
As if they're not entitled to feel that emotion.
Yes.
And
because they're uncomfortable with their partner's anger. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they probably suppress their own.
Mm.
That makes it tough.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it tough. But I usually, in marriage counseling, see one who is very, I am going to deal with this right now, and mm-hmm. we're going to get this over with.
Mm-hmm.
and that's their need. And they're, I mean, I can almost feel that in my body as I'm talking about it, you know? And then there's one
the other that's like, no, we need to like take a moment. We need to slow this down. Let me process for a little bit.
Let's not do that.
Really, like, living in my house, yo.
Yeah. I would say it's most couples. I don't ever really see it where there's two. I've seen one instance, I think, of that where there were two super aggressive deal with it now, mm-hmm. but they were aggressive. Yeah. So the anger was coming out. It was just coming out and caused them. They were both out of their window of tolerance. Mm-hmm. What do we know if you're in red and blue, though? You can't hear each other.
Exactly.
Biologically, you can't hear each other. Mm-hmm. So if that's true, we need to learn to pause and table discussions sometimes, you know, and work on those things together.
By table, you mean like we just don't talk about it again?
Absolutely not.
No.
By table, what we mean is we have gotten
ignore
to the
it.
Point,
let it go.
We've gotten to the point where this conversation is no longer beneficial to both of us, mm-hmm. because we can't hear each other. Mm-hmm. So let's set up a different time that we can reconvene and talk about this. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes when we say table, it sounds like, mm-hmm. oh, let's just not talk about this now and let's hope that it sometime comes up eventually in the future.
No.
Without setting a time frame, and there should be time frames on that, or else we fall into that rupture without repair.
We do.
Now, when
that's
you've been in
the key.
A relationship, whether it be spousal or parental
or even friends
sibling
too.
Or
friends,
yeah, where it's there needs to be patience in the new relationship. Okay, pause. I'm thinking about, you might want to take this out. I'm thinking about like the fear of if I come back to this conversation, the history is it's going to continually be heaped on that person. So they're,
yes,
like what I do, I'm afraid to come back to the conversation because in past relationships I was just beat down again and again and again.
And that is a you thing.
Yeah.
It's very understandable though.
Is mm-hmm. it common?
Yes.
Yes, of
that's
course.
That's what I was saying. Like
that's why you tend to repress, is because that feels too big and it's outside of your window of tolerance. That's outside of your window of tolerance. So your fear of going back keeps you still in that state where you cannot come into green. You cannot connect. So you have to learn to go, am I safe in myself, in my own body? Mm-hmm. And is this person safe enough for me to have a conversation with? And that's part of the building that green zone. Mm-hmm. See, when we acknowledge the feelings, it builds our green zone. It makes that window of tolerance bigger. When we acknowledge them and we learn to express them within the window, it builds the green zone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yes, it's very, I would say normal. Everything's normal in this sense because it's all a body reaction. It's not something you're choosing to do. It's something your body is choosing to do because of history. Mm-hmm. So yes, you have to address it in the body. Learn to address it in the body. Oh, I'm feeling very tense right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm my body is feeling tense. And so I know what's about to come next is I'm going to be out of my window of tolerance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even, catching it there.
Yeah. Even when you use that example of feeling it in your body, I'm also seeing this like visual of looking at that uncomfortable emotion like kind mm-hmm. of like a muscle that mm-hmm. you are exercising and stretching, right? Because it's going to be
stretching
uncomfortable.
Is good.
Mm-hmm.
You know when you're getting into that place because it starts to feel uncomfortable. It starts to feel scary. And allowing yourself to sit in that discomfort even just for a little bit longer could be stretching of that emotion
mm-hmm.
in a certain sense.
So like exposure therapy for your emotions?
A little bit, yeah.
Sort
it's kind
of.
Of like building capacity. Or
I'm like, I would say no.
No. Or I'm like, if that's the way that makes sense
now,
to you, but like
no,
kind of like, it's that expanding your window of tolerance.
The best
right
thing
there.
You said right there was stretching.
Yeah.
We don't want to break out into our window of tolerance and just endure the pain.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't help us because then what does it do?
Just
sends us right back into survival.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we don't want to do it that way. We want to stretch a little bit at a time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if I've got a good pair of pants on,
you slowly stretch that. Stretch,
you know,
that,
which I'm like, oh, that comfy now. Yeah. You know, that's better.
You got to wear it a little bit. You know,
that's right. You got to wear it a little bit,
but and it's not harming you in the wearing it.
Right,
it's just stretching it.
It's just stretching it.
It's a little
uncomfortable.
So it takes it kind of full circles back to safety. The person that you're growing with and learning all this with has to be patient and know your history, and you have to feel safe in them.
But you can't expect that of everyone.
Yeah.
So that's the hardest part. The hardest part is
start at home.
Yeah, start at home is good. And I love that you said that. I really love that you said that, because it's important that you recognize there might not be safe with you either.
Exactly.
So you have to learn, okay, that's okay. I'm going to cultivate safety first. Mm-hmm. And
how do you cultivate safety?
Expressing emotion a little at a time and seeing what happens instead of writing the story you've already written.
There we go.
How do you do that? You go to therapy and you have a counselor for real, like show you how to do that because
you won't.
You can't do it on your own.
You can't know.
Legit.
And a part of that looks like even when you're going to therapy, obviously it takes time to get comfortable with someone. But the best thing to do is to show up as your authentic self. Mm-hmm. Because some people go and they try to put on this face of, yeah, these are the things that I'm dealing with, but I won't let you get into that emotional context.
Mm-hmm. So but now when they do that,
we haven't learned that authentic communication that helps us build safety.
Mm-hmm. You know? So safety is built, though, in trying to be authentic, but you're not going to be authentic at first.
Yeah. It takes
time.
Yeah.
You can't. If
you don't even know who you are.
Well, that's one thing I was saying when she was talking about how, you know, they have to be safe. Well, you're not going to know anything is safe at first because your system is built around nothing is safe. Mm-hmm. So if you're always in survival mode, nothing is safe to you.
True.
So you have to cultivate that safety within yourself first. And that's why we do resourcing at first. You know, what are your resources? What do you pull from? Mm-hmm. What are the things that make you feel happy and content and calm? And how can you look at those things to bring you safety in your own self? Then you'll know if someone is safe eventually. Eventually. It takes time.
Sometimes we go into that, right? And once we learn what safety is and what that feels like and what's necessary for that, it becomes really easy for us to say, I can't step into this because you're not safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that person has no idea what you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that can easily turn to that opposite or that other perspective of a jab of you're telling me that I'm not somebody that you're comfortable with and I'm trying to be this person, but you're not showing me how and I'm not learning how.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like...
It's a dance.
Yeah. Like you slowly learn each other in the process of that. And I really like how you say it's built, right? It requires both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And that also requires, one more time, that authenticity of being open with your emotions, your feelings, your thoughts. And even if somebody's having a response to that, that's not comfortable with you or you're not comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
In the process of that, you're learning what it is that you can give and can't give.
Yes.
You're learning what they can handle and they can't handle as they also grow and build that safety with you.
Mm-hmm. And listen, it's also very important to note this as well. It is also vital that when we start to learn someone actually is unsafe, sometimes you just have to get out of that.
Yeah.
You have to separate yourself from that for a time. Sometimes you have to separate yourself from that forever. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to... say, oh my goodness, I didn't know this really is an unsafe relationship because you couldn't recognize it.
Right.
You know, you might have, you in your mind can think everything is unsafe, true, and you don't trust yourself because everything in you was shut down to survive. So you don't know what you can trust. It's, I'll be honest with you, I always talk to my clients about that. You're going to be confused during this some. Start trusting yourself again because I don't want them to trust me. I want them to trust themselves. That's the goal. Now, at first, we have to kind of trust each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's co-regulation. It's me attuning to you. I'm present with you. I'm sitting in this with you. So you're not alone. But if there is truly a toxic person in your life, and you don't know how to deal with that toxicity, sometimes you just have to go, hey, I am setting a boundary and I'm staying over here for a time being. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard. Now, does that mean you can never go back into that relationship? Depends, right?
Depends.
It depends. It depends. Sometimes we, sometimes though, when we get a little healthier in our own self, we can be around people, not necessarily close with people that bother us and they don't bother us. Because we're like, oh yeah, that's what they do.
Oh yeah, that's common.
Really, that's just what they do and that's who they are. I don't have to, you know, react to that every time.
And I don't have to try to change them.
Lies change everybody.
Oh.
I'm like,
No.
Just kidding. No, but that is, you know, that's why most people set boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. To change the other person. I'm always like, that isn't going to work, guys.
How does Nedra Glover say it? Set boundaries, find peace.
Oh, yes. Yeah. She's good.
Love her.
She's good. Super good. So one thing that Bessel, you know, the main guy of The Body Keeps the Score, kind of brought all this self-awareness around. He's talking about if trauma victims cannot recover until they become familiar with and befriend the sensations in their body. Being frightened means that you live in a body that is always on guard. Angry people live in angry bodies. The bodies of child abuse victims are tense and defensive until they find a way to relax and feel safe. In order to change, people need to become aware of their sensation and the way their bodies interact in the world around them. It's physical awareness. It's physical self-awareness. Think of it that way.
Yep.
Because if you really address the body, it's not going to have that big of a reaction. When we label it, we sit with it, we accept it, and we don't judge it and don't try to change it. You have to not try to change it. It's okay to sit with the feelings and emotions. We don't have to fix them all.
Now, as someone that is in fight or flight or survival mode consistently, i.e. me, I am doing body scans or body checks probably every 5 minutes. Because as I'm becoming more aware, now it doesn't take a lot. Like I know now where I'm going to feel the tension. Like, oh, I'm feeling an emotion. Where is it in my body? It's usually in my shoulders.
Yes.
It's usually in my stomach. So I immediately know how to, what I need to do, what coping skills I need to do to get me back to a more regulated state.
Yes.
But I am consistently doing it now. Not my whole day isn't spent doing that, but when I feel an emotion, sometimes it's even when I feel happiness.
Sure.
And I'm like, why am I having, why am I feeling like I need to get up and get out of this room? It's because I'm feeling content and happy. And so I take the breath, but I just think that as you start out in that journey of feeling your emotions and then feeling them in your body, it almost becomes habitual. If you, if you do the work, if you do it for, you know, what's 21 days makes a habit.
Yeah, to make or break a habit.
So, 21 days of trying to feel your emotions in your body is going to become almost, I don't even recognize I'm doing it sometimes. It's just like, oh, take a breath. Oh,
yeah.
My shoulders are more relaxed.
Yeah, and I have an opinion about breaking a habit. I don't believe we break habits. I believe we replace them. So
that's fair. So
the reason why I say that, well, I don't want it to be a correction. I just want you to hear it because I think it's important that we know if we don't replace that, the negativity with something else, we're just going to go back to what we do. It's forming a new way of being in the world. And that's how noticing how our body's relating to the world. It's fascinating if you really watch. Yeah.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah. And you know, I think to me, it gives me a lot of freedom. You know, when the trauma in your body, you know, you realize you're not choosing that, but you do have a choice. One of the biggest things we want to give trauma survivors is choice, because the element of choice is lost in trauma. Any kind of trauma. Any kind of trauma. Think about that. The element of choice is lost. So if that's true, we always want to give them the element of choice back. So if my body is doing things I'm not aware of, or my emotions are taking over that I'm not aware of. Mm-hmm. We want to have that element of choice back. So that's really what the pause and the window of tolerance and building that does. It gives them the choice to be angry. It gives them the choice to be happy. It gives them the choice to be sad. Instead of before, it's just all happening to me.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I think that's a good place to wrap up. What do you guys think?
I think that's a great place.
I think it's really good.